Hello, Susanna Lobez with you from Sisters in Crime, and we bring you a brand new series of Scarlet Stiletto Bites, scintillating short crime fiction stories by our Australian Sisters in Crime authors. Today's story delves into the concepts of success and beauty and media and AI. And perhaps unsurprisingly, it won the Cross-Genre Award for the 2013 Scarlet Stilettos. Service with a Smile by Emily Collier. Another body found. Police confirm another victim has been discovered with the, by now, signature patterns. One body part mutilated in a specific way, but not enough to cause death. The kill itself appears professional, swift, and expert. And just as with all the other victims, this one appears to have died smiling. 2 months earlier. He was a stunning specimen of a man. Lean and muscular, with a hopeful, shy look in his eyes. Perfect. Tess extended her hand, and the young man grasped it. His palm was moist. Come in, come in. Tess ushered the man into the corridor and greeted the older woman who followed. Oh, you must be Mrs. Call me Yolanda, she cut Tess off with a brisk handshake and toss of her ash-blonde, perfectly bobbed hair. "Pleased to meet you, Yolanda," Tess murmured as the woman, clearly accustomed to the privilege that comes with being attached to an elite sportsperson, marched past. You must be very proud of your son." The son in question, the perfect specimen, was bouncing gently on the spot, moving his weight from leg to leg. Tess had watched him play, both live and on television. He was mercurial in his movements, so quick and graceful. "He's a good boy," Yolanda said, "as long as he stays focused." The door, in its quiet, magnetic way, had closed with a gentle swoosh, shutting out the fierce heat of the day. "Well," said Tess, "it's an absolute honour to meet you, both of you. Can I get you some cool water?" Luke glanced at Yolanda as if seeking permission. "Thank you," Yolanda said. "Room temperature water, if you have it. Lukey's regulating his core temperature, crucial to the training regime." Of course. Tess bowed her head deferentially and showed the two of them to a comfortable viewing couch. It was a long walk down the corridor and back. This was important. Clients needed a few minutes alone. Tess relaxed her face as she walked, flexing her jaw muscles, wriggling her eyebrows and nose. Her face was always set in a mask of mild pleasantry, no matter how the clients spoke to her. Due to the delicate nature of the transaction, sitting just outside what was technically legal, Tess could never afford to put a client offside. Both parties were privy to this, of course, but it did mean that extra effort had to be made in order that relations did not sour. The players themselves rarely bothered her. They were polite and self-centred. It was the people accompanying them who were more of a challenge. The quick, dismissive once-over Yolanda had given Tess when the door opened was familiar. Tess was no beauty. Pale skin that flushed red too easily, thin hair that refused any kind of efforts to buoy it up, and a short, chubby body. With men, it immediately rendered her more or less invisible, as a woman anyway, At best, they treated her like one of the blokes. At worst, she became the target of snide remarks, derisive comments, always jokes, of course. She'd long ago learned to laugh along. Women were a different matter. It began, as it had just now with Yolanda, with a look of triumph that quickly morphed into either pity or cruelty. Tess suspected the latter would be true for Yolanda, but that it would be masked with a supercilious kind of niceness. Tess had been expecting Luke's manager, with whom she'd already had one meeting. He was at the high end of the asshole spectrum, making lewd comments all the way through the viewing and throwing off-the-cuff remarks towards Tess. It must be hard for someone like you to work here, surrounded by such desirable and gorgeous girls all day. Tess had clenched her stomach and fist and smiled benignly. Oh, I'm very lucky. This is a wonderful job. She shook the thoughts from her mind as she arranged glasses on a tray and walked steadily back down the corridor. Luke smiled thanks and sipped his water. Tess topped it up and steered the conversation skillfully through his recent victories on court. She enjoyed seeing him relax and warm into these subjects. After some years in this role, she'd realised that many gifted people were socially awkward. They often worried people wouldn't like them for who they were, that their only appeal lay in their talent. So Tess always made sure to gently introduce more personal topics just before screening. She preferred to see the men select a model while they were in a more open, vulnerable state. This always led to better results than when the decision was purely commercial or acquisitive. My cousins had a farm, she picked up on a comment Luke had made about perhaps moving to the countryside one day after retirement. There was this empty dam and a rope swing attached to the huge old tree. We used to spend hours on it. Ah, the freedom of flying through the air. I loved it. I've always been a bit scared of heights, Luke said, leaning into the conversation, his guard completely down. I used to make up all these crazy excuses when I was with my friends at theme parks, so I didn't have to go on the rides. Tess laughed. You couldn't just tell them you were scared? Luke shrugged, a half smile on his face, his eyes like a little boy, wanting to fit in, make friends. Did you challenge them to a tennis match? That would have shut them up. Luke shook his head, and Tess could see he was caring and modest. Yolanda cleared her throat. Enough chit-chat. Tess lowered the lights. The screen flickered to life with images of attractive women. Tess commenced her usual soft-voiced sales pitch. Each girl is not only beautiful, but also has a sweet personality with subtle differences. Some are more sporty, others more girly. All have an impeccable sense of fashion and excellent social skills. She paused, allowing Luke and Yolanda time to take in the view, then continued. The range on display is not comprehensive. You may see a girl you would like, or you can select certain features, and a unique girl all your own can be customised for you. The technology was magnificent. What started as flat images morphed into holograms and then full three-dimensional AI models, each one an embodiment of female perfection. This was the black aspect of the operation. AI technology was only legislated for essential services, medical care, organ donors, defence personnel. The studio had found a way to slip through a few loopholes, but the only way the service could operate was with a fair amount of secrecy and an enormous, obscene amount of cash. Luke watched the girls with polite regard, his hands folded on his lap. Every now and then, Yolanda would nudge him. Tess noticed that Yolanda had a preference for blondes. Tess herself figured Luke would prefer the more quiet beauty of the brunettes in the range, but she made sure to keep quiet and offer no advice. After 20 minutes or so, Luke still had not moved, and Tess could sense he was disengaging. This was a bad sign. If they didn't commit now and put down the deposit, it was difficult to get them back. She topped up his water again. "Take your time," she said. "Feel free to get up and chat with them. We can leave you alone if you just want to hang out for a bit. They're really lovely, all of them." Luke nodded, pressed his lips together, but his eyes had a hooded look. Damn, Tess thought. She'd established such a good rapport with this guy, and now he was shutting down. What had she read wrong? "Lukey," Yolanda smirked sharply, "what is wrong with you? All these girls are very beautiful and would make a wonderful girlfriend for you." "Oh, yeah, they're all lovely. I don't... Luke broke off. Tess observed that he seemed to be in mild distress. Panic attack? Maybe he was gay. They'd faced that issue before. It required a different approach, but could still work out perfectly well. It would have been helpful to know up front. I'm sorry. He stood up, turning away from the screen. "I don't think this is going to work out." Yolanda stood and grabbed his arm. "It must work out. There are sponsors, Lukey. There is money, a lot of money at stake. Many people are depending on you." They depend on me for my tennis playing, Mum, not for who my girlfriend is." "Oh, don't be so naive, Lukey. You know how important it is for the media, the close-ups of the people in your box, especially at the big matches." Luke shook his head again and gently removed Yolanda's hand from his arm. It doesn't feel right." He looked at Tess and she felt a stab of emotion. She inhaled sharply and regained control. "My Lukey, lovely boy, you are so sweet. All these pretty girls are made just for you." Yolanda included Tess in her entreaty, clearly hoping the professional in the room would add some kind of compelling argument, something to get Luke past his cold feet. But Tess was in a kind of shock, her body trembling, feeling vulnerable in a way she never had before. She barely raised a protest as Luke led his angry mother down the corridor to the large white door. She closed it after them and sank down on the polished stone floor. Why is Komen single? Luke Komen is one of the few tennis stars not accompanied at matches by a gorgeous girlfriend. Speculation as to why continues to run rife. The next day, he called her. Tess had been startled, but in a deep way, not surprised. Yesterday's shaking was replaced by a rush of warmth brought on by the sound of his voice. She met him that evening in the park next to his training court. "This is it." His smile was sheepish. His face flushed as he gestured to the big old ash tree. Together they climbed it, and now they were sitting side by side on the wide branch. "Are you okay?" Tess whispered. although they were barely touching, a line of connection ran down the side of her body, from where their shoulders met to the skin on their little fingers. "It's scary," Luke said, as she wondered for a moment if they had done the wrong thing. "But I like it." He moved his hand to hold hers. They swung their legs and watched as the sun, like a soft egg yolk, sank to the horizon. The sky blushed pink, with orange flames licking the edges. On the way back down, she could hear his breath coming in short gasps, so she knew he really was scared. This made her heart swell. She guided him quietly in a cheerful voice, telling him in a matter-of-fact way where to put his feet, how to safely shift the weight of his body. Back on the ground, his face was red with effort. "Wow, you weren't kidding," she said. "I'm not even that scared of spiders." He laughed. She tensed up. Maybe she'd embarrassed him. Then he pushed her in a playful way, like a little boy would. This made her laugh, and they both cracked up. The more she tried to stop the laughter, the stronger it came, until she was doubled over, struggling for breath, her stomach aching. He was next to her, and they fell in a gentle way to the grass that was still warm from the day's heat. Then they were kissing, and it was the most natural thing in the world. His lips were soft and tasted just a bit salty. "Have you eaten?" Luke asked after a while. They'd stopped kissing and had been sitting chatting about small things. The training he'd done that day, how he loved the hot weather while she hated it, always longing for the cooler touch of winter. By way of answer, Tessa's stomach made a growling sound, and this set their laughter off again. He pulled her up to her feet. "Come on, there's a great place near here, Italian. They only make 3 or 4 things each day, so whatever they've made, that's what you get." Tess looked down at his hand, brown and strong, curved over hers. "Sounds great," she said. "But what?" he asked. "I can hear a but in your voice." "Well," she said, and used her free hand to gesture to herself, as you might to a broken statue or ugly stepsister from a fairy tale. "Well, what?" She pushed on, not wanting anything to happen between them that wasn't honest. The feelings of the tree, the laughter, the kiss, his eyes on her, they were wonderful feelings. But she lived firmly in the real world and knew she was not the kind of woman who should be seen in public with a man like Luke. "What I mean is," she said, it won't look right. I mean, I could maybe pass as your physiotherapist or personal secretary or something, but night time, dinner, if anyone sees us..." He touched her face lightly, as if it was something very precious. "I hope everyone sees us," he said. "You're beautiful. You must know that. My God, I've never felt so lucky in my life." She could smell the liniment he must have rubbed into his muscles post-training, a reminder that for all his strength, he also had vulnerabilities. "Am I deluded?" he said, his eyes soft and voice serious. "I mean, don't you feel like we just found each other? Not many people get this, I don't think." They stood apart then for a moment in silence. Every logical part of Tessa's mind knew this could never work. Luke held out his hand and she took it. Once their hands were clasped, fingers entwined, Tess knew, no matter what the logical part of her mind said, she would not want to let go. "Finally, a love game for tennis star. the scrumptious Luke Coman has been seen around town with a mystery woman. No confirmation as to who the lucky gal is, but let's just say she's a different type from the usual stunners our tennis gods choose. The first time they were snapped by paparazzi, she panicked. They shouldn't see us together. What will it do to your image? Safe in Luke's car, driving away from the frenzy, Luke reassured her again. He didn't care what people thought. He hated the idiotic, celebrity-hungry media, but if they wanted photos of him doing boring things like shopping and eating, it may as well be with someone he truly loved. You love me? Tess asked, and he looked shy, as he had that first night up the tree. She felt it too, this strange, tender moment at the traffic lights on a busy city street. It was so incongruous, it had to be real love. What about your mother? She asked. Luke smiled his funny, crooked smile and rolled his eyes. Oh, she'll come round. Mum has all this brittle polish on her surface, but under it all, she's very soft. And your manager? Your team? His face became still, the smile fading. I don't care what they think. They have no place in my personal life. A tight pain gripped Tess, where a moment earlier her heart had felt so warm and soft. What is it? She asked, her voice small. Oh, no big deal. A sponsor pulled out. Assholes. There are plenty more. I only want sponsors who are investing in my talent anyway. Tess was accustomed to the flicker of shame that accompanied a slur on her looks. It had happened too many times to even be worth noting, but it could still sting. She bit her lip. Luke wrapped his arms around her as if to protect her from every barb the world could throw her way. Please don't worry, he said, turning and touching her face with his hand. I will never let them get to you. He smiled again. This time it was his media smile, broad and slightly empty. After all, I am their golden ticket. I call the shots. They hadn't spoken of his team again. Over the following days and weeks, Tess allowed herself to simply enjoy, for the first time in her life, the soft, slow fall into love. Once she'd made the decision, Tess was elated. She had always valued her job, but the prospect of never having to sit through another meeting with an inarticulate Adonis and his oaf of a manager filled her with unexpected joy. It was a personal decision. Luke didn't know about it. Tess wanted to be sure she was doing it for her own reasons. She listed these in her head as she walked down the pretty street toward her workplace, still heavy with late summer scents, bougainvillea and frangipani. She wouldn't give these particular reasons in her official resignation letter, as they involved words like freedom and love and beauty and the shortness of life, romantic words, all of them. She would simply say she was looking for a change in direction and thank the studio very much indeed for the wonderful opportunity and years of fulfilling employment. During the last few weeks, work had ceased to be as important to her sense of self. She had never experienced being so seen and valued by another person as she was by Luke. Tess's face was red and her skin damp with sweat by the time she reached the enormous white door and used her swipe pass to open it. She wasn't going to give up everything and go on tour with Luke. She wouldn't be one of those kinds of girlfriends, but a bit of travelling would be fun. She had plenty of money saved and could afford to take some time off, maybe a year or so, and think about what she wanted to do next with her life. She slid the door shut behind her and paused for a moment to let the cool inside air caress her face. Marriage? Babies? Tess let out an uncharacteristic giggle. These were things she had never considered, always assuming she would be on her own forever. Following her regular routine, she activated the viewing room and waited a few minutes to ensure everything was in order. She smiled at the girls as they sprang into life, and they in turn smiled back. Tess felt an unexpected rush of affection. It was ridiculous. These were not real people after all, just highly sophisticated AI life forms created for one unique purpose. But she had spent every working day with them for more than 5 years. It reminded her of being a child and how emotionally connected she had always felt to her teddy bears, soft toys and Barbie dolls. She would miss them. "Is everything in order?" one of them asked as Tess, lost in her reverie, paused for longer than usual. Yes, everything's fine," she answered brightly. "You look sad." It was one of the latest Swedish blonde models, one that Yolanda would surely have approved of for Luke. Tess hardened her face and voice. It was inappropriate to discuss things of a personal matter with the models. "I'm fine," she said dismissively and left the viewing room. Tess walked the long corridor to her small office, unlocked the door and flicked the power on. Everything came to life. Lights, air conditioner, computer. She was caught off guard by an image of Luke on the computer screen. For an instant, she was filled with joy. She smiled, reminded of how lucky she was and how much a better life waited out there for her now. No need to mourn leaving these inane, pretty robots behind. Then her brain caught up with her heart. Why was there an image of Luke on the computer screen? She would never have been so indiscreet as to put one there. It was a news story. Why was Luke in the news? He had no major tournament coming up. He would have told her if the media were interviewing him for any other reason. Tess paused the story and then spun back to catch it from the beginning. "Tennis star dead. In shocking news, one of the world's favourite and most talented tennis players, Luke Koman, has been found dead. Koman's body was discovered early this morning by his manager. Police are yet to release a statement, but it would appear that Koman disturbed an intruder in his apartment during the night and was hit several times with a blunt object." The story ran on, and Tess stood very still watching it unfold. Koman's mother, to whom he was very close, was too upset to comment. Remarks from other players, not in response to the event, it was too soon for that, but all stating what a great guy he was, such a gifted but also fair and generous player and ambassador for the sport. And then the image of Luke dissolved and the story cut to footage of his manager. A terrible tragedy. The world has lost more than a player. To me, he was almost like a son. The manager paused in his prepared speech and seemed to look straight down the camera at Tess, his eyes like two dark stones. His tongue flicked out briefly to wet his lips. "There are many questions. Was the intruder a stranger? We can only hope the police are thorough in their investigations. Any persons of an undesirable nature who were known to be hanging around, well, Let's just say there are desperate people out there who try to make something more of their sad little lives by associating with celebrities in whatever way they can. Here he paused and seemed to almost smile. An eye for an eye. This kind of crime cannot go unpunished. Tess slapped her hand at the screen, shutting down the story. She swallowed, her mouth dry. All her mind kept returning to, as if on instant replay, was the way that lowlife had said the word undesirable. How he had lingered on it. Just the same as when he'd first come to the studio and made his glib remark to her. Parched, as if heat was emanating from her core, Tess made her way to the kitchen. She opened the smooth, white, sliding cabinet doors that stored the beautiful crystal reserved for the players and their entourages. She downed a glass of water in one gulp. Then, one by one, she removed each glass and hurled them against the granite wall. She smashed a glass for every comment, glance, and insult that she or any other woman had ever endured. The ball of grief that had lodged in her chest would open later. For now, she was fired with rage. The next few hours passed like so many hours had passed for Tess in the studio. She was methodical, efficient, and calm. She did what had to be done, cleared up the debris in the kitchen, rescheduled the mid-morning appointment, locked the external doors, and made her way to the control room. It had been a few years since she'd had much to do with programming. The models were increasingly sophisticated and rarely needed adjusting or maintenance. But there was an advantage to having been the ugly, smart girl. So many hours spent poring over code, forcing herself to stay ahead of the pack, to always be at the cutting edge of the technology. The hum of the room and the speed at which the code appeared, at the touch of her fingers, cascading on the screen, was soothing. Her mind clear, concentration fierce. Within an hour she was done. She collected her belongings, placing them neatly into a box. She deactivated her office computer account and security access codes. It was satisfying to take the rather old-fashioned step of leaving a handwritten resignation note on the kitchen counter, like a letter from a wife finally with the strength to leave her abusive husband. Outside, the morning heat had softened, with just the slightest edge of cool. She usually loved this kind of weather, the first smell of leaves turning, how autumn made anything seem possible. Tess gave the address to the taxi driver and told him which route to take. He wore a red turban and tendrils of hair curled out at the back of his neck. The curls reminded her of Luke. She gripped the seat and pushed the image of Luke from her mind. The man smiled and told her to have a very good day as she issued him with a generous tip. The house was in a cul-de-sac. She pushed the buzzer at the security gate, announced who she was, and was let in. Stone pavers set in gravel, through a beautifully designed native garden, led her to the front door. Money could buy taste. Another thing she'd noted over many years working for the privileged. "You're bold." The manager almost looked impressed as he opened the door. "May I come in?" "Bitch with balls," he laughed. She stepped into the foyer, dark and cool. "Sorry about your boyfriend," he said, and flicked his tongue out like he had on the news story. "Huge fucking talent, but he got too big an idea of himself. Couldn't let other players see that. Start thinking they were better than the game, the sponsors, the things that are important." He paused, ran his cold eyes up and down Tessa's body. "The kind of people we want associated with it." Tess exhaled slowly, forced her mouth into a smile. "I want to apologize." She was surprised at how calm her voice sounded. "I know I did the wrong thing by Luke. Yolanda, you and your team." He stood, arms folded, the amused look still on his face. "I've brought a peace offering," she said. Tess reached into her bag and pulled out the data drive. Small and round, it was shaped like a makeup compact. That had been one of her ideas, part of the marketing, that when you ordered one of these perfect girlfriends, they arrived in a compact form. She flicked it open and activated the drive. Within a few seconds, an image appeared of a stunning woman, masses of blonde hair and legs to die for. The smile on the manager's face broadened. "One of our latest models," Tess said, "not even released on the market yet." The image filled out, becoming a hologram. The manager's lizard tongue crept out again. He looked even more pleased. The hologram solidified. The beautiful woman blinked, stretched, as if waking from a pleasant dream. She turned to Tess, her eyes wide with trust and goodwill. Tess nodded. The woman then directed her luminous smile to the manager and extended her hand. Tess heard his intake of breath and a small grunt of desire. "Oh, very fucking nice," he said the word slowly. "What's her name?" "You can ask her yourself," Tess replied. "What's your name, sweetheart?"
"Eve."
"Eve," he repeated, nodding, reaching out to take what had been gifted. Eve's arms shot up, fingers extended. With one swift move, she inserted them into the manager's eye socket, twisted and pulled. He screamed, stumbling back, arms flailing, trying to grab at Eve, at Tess, at anything. "An eye for an eye," Eve said so sweetly. The gush of blood was dark, thick and smooth like silk. The strong metallic smell filled the foyer. Tess inhaled deeply, now trembling, wanting to experience this moment to its fullest. The manager was burbling, incoherent sounds, both hands pressed over the gaping wound on his face. He slipped in his own blood and fell against the wall. Eve propped him up, and he shuddered, his face still set in the clown-like shape of a smile, as if so shocked by the action, he hadn't yet processed what was happening. Eve stepped back, swung around, and clipped him in the side of the neck. Tess heard a snap like a fat rubber band breaking, saw his head loll to one side, his body collapse to the floor. Her breath was coming hard and fast, adrenaline coursing through her body. Exhilarated. "Is everything in order?" Eve asked. "Yes, thank you," Tess said. "Everything is just right." Eve placed the eyeball carefully on the floor near the manager's head, tendons trailing out like useless pieces of string. The two women stood for a moment. The foyer was quiet and peaceful again. Then Tess deactivated Eve. Her body shimmered, dissolved, and she was gone. Back outside, Tess decided she would walk home, weave her way through the back streets, allow her body time to calm down. She didn't put the compact back in her bag, but held it tightly in her hand. As she walked, she pictured the models at the studio, and those already out in the world who had now been reprogrammed. a simple adjustment from subservience to vengeance, an increase in physical capacity from aesthetic to combat, a recognition code inserted so that the command to kill would be activated by any misogynist, violent asshole. An avenging army. Not enough to bring Luke back or ease the pain of that loss, but enough, perhaps, to make the world a slightly better place. One startled, smiling, dead brute at a time. Police baffled. Investigators admit they are no closer to solving the current murder spree, remaining perplexed in the absence of a suspect, motive, or fingerprints. The end. Thanks for listening to today's Scarlet Stiletto Bites podcast. Please follow, review, generally spread the word. We have no paywall at all. I'm Susanna Lopez. I look forward to narrating another Scarlet Stiletto Bite story for you next Friday.